Welcome to Let's Talk Micro.
Hello, my dear audience. Welcome to another episode of Let's Talk Micro. As always, I hope you had a great week. And you can always find Let's Talk Micro on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, Goodpods, wherever you listen to podcasts, you can find Let's Talk Micro. As far as social media, I am on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube as Let's Talk Micro, on X as Let's Talk Micro 1, on LinkedIn as Luis Plaza, and I have an email address which is letstalkmicro@outlook.com. So either via social media or via email, you can reach out with any suggestions, any feedback. Those are always welcome and appreciated. So please go ahead and subscribe to the podcast, download episodes, and if the app allows you to do so, please go ahead and leave a review. You know, thank you so much for the support. I am always so grateful with all the wonderful reception that Let's Talk Micro is having. And if you are looking to learn more about antibiotics, please check out www.learnantibiotics.com and the Learn Antibiotics book available on Amazon. These resources include cheat sheets, practice tests, games, and more, and they are being used by thousands of people worldwide and may be helpful for you or your colleagues. And those, of course, are some wonderful resources from Dr. Timothy Gauthier, who's a very passionate pharmacist, and he was a guest of the podcast where he came in and he talked about antimicrobial stewardship, antibiograms, and more. Great episode. If you haven't checked it out, please go ahead and do so. And as you know, Let's Talk Micro does not have any sponsors. So one of the goals of bringing more content, you know, is to attend different conferences and going and, you know, meet people and bring potential guests. So if you want to support the podcast in any way, you can do so by a Venmo link, which is in the show notes, and also by buying a coffee, KO-FI, which is in the show notes as well. Well, anyway, thank you for the support if you end up, you know, supporting the podcast in any form. Thank you. And if you haven't checked out the previous episode, please go ahead and do so. I continued the journey through gram-positive rot, and this time it was Corynebacterium's turn. I give an overview of the species, and Corynebacterium, they're catalase-positive, gram-positive rods. They are non-spore-forming, and they are aerobic and facultative anaerobic. And for the students out there, I just want to say that, you know, keep that in mind, as, you know, I talked about that in the previous episode, but that's the difference between Corynebacterium and Bacillus. So with Bacillus, you know, you see spores. With Corynebacterium, you don't. And this is something that is used, you know, when you are doing gram stains for gram-positive rods, and you kind of classify them, you know, you group them into different morphologies, and you use terms, you know, like for Bacillus, you use terms like, you know, like boxy, large gram-positive rods, for Lactobacillus, long and thin, and for Corynebacterium, you know, coriniform, you know, palisades, V-shape, Chinese letters, those are things that you hear when it comes to Corynebacterium, but when it comes to gram-positive rods as a whole, this is something that you use when you are identifying them. And the genus of Corynebacterium, along with other genera, are considered coriniform bacteria. So they are short or slightly curved rods which are arranged in palisades. They are club-shaped, which actually, you know, Coryne means club in ancient Greek. And I mentioned examples of other genera. I also talked about the term dipteroids that we hear in the lab, and, you know, these are species recovered from clinical specimens but deemed non-pathogenic. And this is something, you know, that those of you that work in the lab as medical laboratory scientists, when you are working cultures and you see these colonies, you know, they can be white, you know, large, small, and you do your gram stain and you see the coriniform bacteria, you know, you typically make a note saying, you know, these are dipteroids, and you call it normal skin flora. You know, there are some situations that I talked about in the episode when you can start thinking of them as pathogens. And this is basically when it's the only thing growing or in large amounts, you know, like large colony counts. In the episode, I also talked about that the fact that, you know, that it can be difficult to establish pathogenicity because many of the species are recovered from the environment and some are part of the normal flora. I also went over media and biochemicals. And I pretty much ended the episode talking about Corynebacterium diphtheriae. In rare cases, it is isolated from humans. It is primarily transmitted through respiratory secretions or skin lesions. And the disease caused by this organism is diphtheria. But it is only caused by strains that produce the diphtheria toxin. and the toxin kills healthy cells, and the dead tissue forms a membrane called a pseudomembrane that causes the patient to have a hard time breathing or swallowing. So definitely a great episode with great information. So if you haven't checked it out, please go ahead and do so. And definitely go ahead and check out the series about bacillus as well. You know, especially if you're a student, so you can just start, you know, building your notes and putting everything together in preparation for your exam. And I pretty much ended the episode talking about different media. Well, I mentioned the names, but I didn't go over it. Media that is used to isolate Corynebacterium diphtheriae. And that's what I'm going to be talking about in this episode, on today's episode, with some other things. So, I mentioned cysteine tellurite agar, modified Tinsdale agar, and Loeffler medium. So let's go ahead and talk about this. The first one is cysteine tellurite agar. And I'm going ahead and talk about them individually, but both cysteine tellurite and Tinsdale agar have a high concentration of potassium tellurite. And that, of course, you know, brings the question, what does this do? Well, you know, it inhibits normal flora. And then you might ask, you know, what does cysteine do? Well, you know, it enhances the growth of fastidious organisms, including Corynebacterium diphtheriae. And I want to go over some things before I actually go over the agar. When it comes to Corynebacterium diphtheriae, the isolates are divided into four biotypes. And the biotypes, you know, they're classified based on the morphology and biochemicals. And they are gravis, mitis, belfanti, and intermedius. And I hope I'm pronouncing them right. You know, I'm reading for a textbook. I haven't had much interaction with Corynebacterium diphtheriae. So forgive me if I am, you know, mispronouncing them. As mentioned in the previous episode, species of Corynebacterium, they grow on blood agar. And the morphology, it can vary depending on the organism, on the species. So when it comes to diphtheria, Corynebacterium diphtheriae, the morphology of the colonies on blood agar, it varies with the biotype. For example, with biotype intermedius, the colonies are small, gray, and translucent. When it comes to biotypes mitis, belfanti, and gravis, they can be medium, white, and opaque. And I talked about Corynebacterium ulcerans and pseudotuberculosis, that they can actually carry the gene for the toxin as well. So those, they resemble C. diphtheriae on the agar. But definitely, you know, for the medical laboratory scientists and the students, you know, remember that a lot of, you know, typical Corynebacterium colonies, you know, they can be anywhere from white, you can have large colonies, you can have like pinpoint, irregular morphologies. So this is something very important to remember, that when you see white colonies, don't assume it is cocci. And I talked about that, and it's something that I talk about a lot, that the Gram stain is something that's very important. So don't assume. With white colonies, you can have yeast, you can have GPR, you can have GPC. So take the time to use that wonderful tool, and it can help you from making a mistake, which at the end affects your patient. And in this episode, I'm going to be talking about those three mediums. And they are from, the ones that I'm talking about, they are from Fisher Scientific. No sponsorship, just so you know. So this is not a sponsorship, this is not a plug or anything. But it's just, you know, some information that I found, and I'm going to be sharing it with you. So let's go ahead and talk about cysteine tellurite blood agar from Fisher. So it is used for the isolation of Corynebacterium diphtheriae. It has peptones, which provides nitrogen and carbon compounds. It has sodium chloride, which supplies electrolytes and maintains osmotic balance. The medium is differential, and the differential portion is provided by potassium tellurite, which is reduced by Corynebacterium. And as I mentioned before, it inhibits gram-positive and gram-negative bacteria, allowing Corynebacterium to grow. It is recommended that both the throat and nasopharynx are cultured in order to maximize the recovery of Corynebacterium diphtheriae. So you will go ahead and, you know, you plate the sample as you normally would on the media, and then you go ahead and incubate it aerobically at 33 to 37 degrees for 24 to 48 hours. And then after that, you examine. So your colonies are, you know, the colonies of Corynebacterium diphtheriae, They are black or gray, and they can have a halo, which is due to the breakdown of cysteine. One limitation of the agar is that colonies of staph or strep can be black due to the reduction of tellurite, but of course this issue can be resolved by a gram stain. So there you go again. A wonderful tool, something to keep in mind. And this is, you know, typically with other medium, you know, when you get like, you know, chromogenic agar or media that's designed to isolate a particular organism, if you're unsure, you can go ahead and do a gram stain. So that's simple enough, and you check. You know, for example, like chromogenic agar for MRSA, and you know, like if there's one where the MRSA colonies are green, but sometimes you can get other things growing and they can produce green colonies. So when unsure, you can go ahead and do a gram stain. In the case of MRSA, you see gram-positive cocci, of course. And in the case of cyanobacterium, you do a gram stain and you see gram-positive rods, you know, coriniform shape. And another thing is that it is recommended that you keep the plate for 48 hours before you report it as negative. So that's why, you know, incubate from 24 to 48 hours. Now, let's go ahead and talk about Tinsdale agar. So this agar was developed to isolate and differentiate C. diphtheriae. In this medium, Cyanobacterium diphtheriae colonies, there are black with a brown-black halo after 48 hours of incubation. Colonies of Cyanobacterium ulcerans also produce this halo. Dipteroids and other organisms do not produce this type of colonies. As mentioned, the medium has tellurite, which is reduced to tellurium, producing the gray to black colonies. And the halo is because hydrogen sulfide is produced from cysteine. And once it is produced, it interacts with the tellurite, producing the halos. Besides potassium tellurite and cysteine, the medium also has peptones and sodium chloride. So sodium chloride for your electrolytes, osmotic balance, peptones for, you know, carbon source. So you go ahead and plate your sample as you normally would, and you incubate the agar at 35 to 37 degrees in aerobic conditions for 24 to 48 hours. Then after that, examine for those distinctive colonies. As far as limitations, if the medium is incubated in a CO2 environment, carbon dioxide, this can delay the formation of the halos. Also, some colonies of staph and strep might produce those colonies with halos. And then there is low flow medium. So, older cultures of Cyanobacterium diphtheriae, they have metachromatic granules. And these are used for storing organic polyphosphate. Loeffler's medium is used to stimulate the growth of C. diff, Cyanobacterium diphtheriae, and the production of these granules. And I am going to talk about this medium, and however, it is no longer recommended to be used as a primary medium for throat swabs because of overgrowth of normal flora. So the medium was initially developed for the cultivation of Cyanobacterium. It has horse serum, beef heart infusion, and dextrose. And this media enhances microscopic and colonial morphology, virulence, and chromogenesis. And it can even bring some of those properties back, and that's what the package insert says from Thermo Fisher. Well, dextrose is used as a carbon source. The horse serum is a protein source. And you go ahead and plate your sample. And for potentially contaminated samples, it is recommended to plate it first in a medium such as Tinsdale or cysteine tellurite. Once your sample is plated, you can incubate it at 33 to 37 degrees aerobically for up to 4 days. Cyanobacterium diphtheriae colonies are cream color with slightly raised centers. From this, you can go ahead and prepare smears and stain them with Loeffler's methylene blue stain. Then you can go ahead and examine those for the dark blue metachromatic granules. Then it is recommended to subculture the colonies to blood agar for additional testing, you know, like biochemicals. As far as limitations go, so the strain needs to be toxigenic to be diagnostic of diphtheriae. And I mentioned this in the previous episode, but it is just good to keep it in mind that not all strains of Cyanobacterium diphtheriae carry the toxin, you know. So this is something that you have to keep in mind. Just because the organism is growing does not mean that it causes diphtheria. And this, you know, chronic bacterium diphtheria, pseudotuberculosis, and ulcerans, they can carry the gene, which is actually transmitted by bacteriophages. So this is something to keep in mind. And in all honesty, in the lab, you might never see it, or maybe if you see it, you know, might be infrequent. This is not an organism that you isolate frequently. I mean, I think at one point in time, I maybe seen it once in the lab, and I'm not sure if it was producing the toxin or not. I mean, I remember that it was identified by Molitov, and I'll talk more about this, about identifying cyanobacterium, but definitely it is not a common organism. So this is something that you might not see a lot, and especially, you know, I speak a lot more on from the United States side, and with vaccination and things like that. And I know, like, this is a hot topic and a very polarizing topic, but I'm not gonna expand on it. But a lot of people, they're vaccinated, you know, they get the diphtheria vaccine. So it is an organism that you might not see, and then even if you see it, it might not be carrying the toxin. So it's something that maybe if the physician is suspecting it, you know, if the information leads to that, then definitely let the lab know. So we can kind of keep an eye and start. Maybe if we have this media, and maybe we can use that and think about that. But normally it's not the first one that comes in mind when it comes to respiratory pathogens. And I just want to circle back real quick to the Loeffler's medium. So non-toxigenic strains will grow on the agar as well. So that's why I said that, you know, in order to be diagnostic of diphtheria, it needs to be producing the toxin. So you can get just regular strains growing on it. So if you have isolated this organism in the lab and this is, you know, diphtheria is being suspected, then if you're going to test for the toxin, there are two methods that are commonly used. And those are nucleic acid amplification testing, NAAT, NAT, and ELEC. So I am just briefly going to touch on ELEC testing. This is an immunoprecipitation test. And what you do is, there is a disc that has the toxin, and you place that on an ELEC plate that is inoculated with the test strain and the control. Then the toxin diffuses through the agar and produces a precipitin line with toxin-producing isolates. And in the literature, there's also a modified version of it. So if you want to learn more about it, I definitely invite you to, you know, do on using a search engine, you know, search for the ELEC test and do more research on it. But definitely, you know, the ASM, American Society for Microbiology, it has some publications on it. So if you want to find out more, please go ahead and do so. So we have this media that helps us, you know, isolate cyanobacterium diphtheriae. And of course, you know, when it comes to identifying in the lab, there are many methods that can be used. But definitely the popular ones, you know, like Molitov, he can identify it. You can also identify it via the API Crina system. And maybe those of you that are younger techs, or maybe you're working in a facility that has like Molitov and things like Vitek, you know, you might not be familiar with the API system, but it is still used. You know, it's definitely very popular. It is used in many labs. And of course, you know, maybe the use might be reduced depending on the instrumentation that you have and things like, you know, like gene sequencing and molecular tests, they make advances. And I will talk more about the API systems at some point in the podcast. Definitely, I work with API and I use it for enterobacterales and non-enterobacterales. So I have mixed opinions with it. But definitely in laboratories where they don't have instruments like Molitov and other systems, this is one of the primary methods used for testing. So I'll talk more about that at some other time. But when it comes to cyanobacterium as a whole, definitely Molitov is a big one to identify them. And then, of course, you know, Vitek has a card called the ANC, which identifies, you know, different species of cyanobacterium. And that will be a separate episode talking about the Vitek. And there is also the rapid CB test, which I always have some mixed opinions about it. And this type of test, you know, it typically involves the, you know, your result produces a number, which it's a code, you know, a combination of numbers, and then you put it in a database and an ID is produced. And sometimes, you know, people might tinker a little bit with the numbers, you know, positive, negative, to get a result. So that's maybe one I am not such a fan of it. But it's a system that is out there, and you know, it's in smaller labs where you don't get that much testing. It's something that is probably used. Okay, so let's go ahead and recap. So today we talked about Corynebacterium diphtheriae, and there are four biotypes, which are classified based on the morphology and biochemicals, and I mentioned the names, and I talked about the morphology on blood agar, and then there is media that is used to isolate Corynebacterium diphtheriae, which it helps in a differential media, and these are cysteine tellurite agar and modified Tinsdale agar. And at the end, you know, it has potassium tellurite, which is reduced, and that causes a color change. The colonies are black to gray. And then there's a halo produced, which is due to the fact that, you know, the hydrogen sulfide is produced from cysteine, and this interacts with the tellurite, then thus the halo is produced. And then there is Loeffler's medium, which stimulates the metachromatic granules, which can be seen by performing a Loeffler's methylene blue stain. And as always, remember that if you get questionable colonies and maybe you're not sure if that's what it is, always do a Gram stain. Because as mentioned, sometimes, you know, species of staph and strep, they might produce black colonies, they might grow on the medium. So when in doubt, go back to the basics and look at the Gram stain. It's definitely such a helpful tool, and I cannot emphasize this enough to the techs. In a world of gene sequencing, of Molitoff, of molecular testing, please don't stop doing Gram stains. I beg you. It is still such an important tool, and it helps you with your job. So please continue them. Remember that a human being is at the other side of this test. So keep that in mind when you are doing your testing, and use all the tools that you have at your disposal to maximize, you know, to produce the best outcome for your patient. And that, my dear audience, it's the end of this episode. I hope you enjoy learning about different media used for the isolation of Corynebacterium diphtheriae. As always, I enjoy sharing this information with you. As you are listening to this, we are celebrating Lab Week, Laboratory Professionals Week in the United States. So thank you so much. Happy Lab Week. Thank you for everything you do. And not only those laboratory professionals in the United States, but from all over the world. We all have different terms, right, for our names, like medical lab scientists, biomedical scientists, so many different designations. But thank you for everything you do. Your work is so important. A lot of times it feels that we only hear from other people when we're doing something wrong. But, you know, we face so many challenges. You know, we're short staffed. COVID was a big challenge for us. We navigated past that. So thank you. Thank you. And so take the time to say hello and thank you to a fellow professional. If you stop by the lab, let them know, hey, you're appreciated. It's always great to hear that. And definitely shout out to the ASCLS Florida for inviting me to speak last week. Thank you so much. So thank you to Dr. Maridalis Rodriguez and Emilia Marrero. Shout out to you. Thank you again. As always, thank you for the support, for downloading episodes. Great things coming your way. And please continue bringing that passion to what you do. It's so important. You do such great work. So, as always, stay motivated, stay safe, and of course, continue talking micro. Until the next time. Bye.